want to welcome all of you here this morning. By way of introduction, I'm Jerry Olds. I serve as state engineer, and we're here this morning to hold an informational hearing on some rules that we have published in the Utah State Bulletin on August 1st. Those rules are referred to as administrative procedures for defining beneficial uses for supplemental water rights. And we're excited to have this many turn out to this, but I would say you need to look at your life and find better things to do than come to a hearing to talk about this type of stuff. Hopefully we can lighten it up a little bit and make it interesting and informative to you. Our objective in this hearing today is to explain why we are proposing these rules and then go through them and have some discussion so that you can make a better informed decision as to whether you have issues or concerns with those rules. As I indicated, we published these rules back on August 1st. I guess the water community met the end of August to see whether there were concerns. And at that time, they came to me and said, we would like a hearing. There's a lot of questions within the water community on this matter. And so we agreed that we would hold this hearing. Then we have extended the comment period on these proposed rules till November 3rd. And we welcome your written comments with regards to those, because we want to end up with a product that is useful both from the Division of Water Rights perspective as well as from the water community. And if you boil it all down, all we're trying to do is when someone comes to us with a change application and their water right involves various supplemental rights in that, that then we quantify or determine the sole supply on that particular water right that the change is filed on, so we can make a decision, and it is such that it quantifies that right and defines how much water is involved there. There's a sign-up sheet in the back. We would encourage you, if you haven't signed up on that, to do so. Again, that's just so that we can keep you notified of any developments with regards to this matter. As far as our program today, and we'd like to keep it very informal, again, our objective is to give you some information so that you can better understand what we're doing here. But Boyd Clayton will go through a discussion as to what led up to this and why we're doing it and what we're hoping to accomplish. Then he'll go through the proposed rules. He was hoping to get on the wireless internet, but he's having some problems with that. So if you need a copy of the proposed rules, he'll probably be using that. We have some on the back table there. So if you did not bring those, they are available there. And then we will provide time at the end to respond to any questions that you might have. Any concerns or issues on that? If not, I'll turn the time over to Boyd and let him go through that presentation. Again, if you have clarifying questions as he goes through that, make sure you ask those. Don't get him off on tangents, but if there's something that needs to be clarified, let's do that so that everybody's understanding what we're doing here. Boyd?
If you've been following this topic, you know we've been trying to find something that will work for some time. At the Water Users Workshop in the spring, there was a session on sole supplying supplemental rights. We thought we were going to publish rules before we got there, and then we thought we were going to publish them right after we got back. And as we've continued to work on it, it's a difficult issue. It's got some thorny points to it, but it's an important concept that needs to be defined and worked out. And so that's why we proposed the rule. As you all are aware, beneficial use is the measuring the limit of water right. And whenever we're working with the change application, whenever someone acquires a right, they acquire a right believing that it has some value, and that value should be based on the use they assume that it has certain uses with it as they acquire the right. As the state engineer approves change applications, essentially what his role ends up being is to look at what uses that water right has and to assess what the equivalent uses could be if that it could be changed to. And so it's important that we have a good understanding of what the previous uses were as we analyze a change application to look at what uses the water right might move to. Am I standing in the way of half of you to see this? I'm sorry. I'm trying to move that way. Just
how's that? So as we approach this subject, it's first important to understand what supplemental rights are. And for this example, what I'm using is irrigation. And what I'm suggesting is that we have four water rights. One water right is this square area. One water right is this area. One water right is that area. And one water right is the red area. It'd be nice in real life if none of them shared any of the uses. And then we wouldn't have to worry about supplemental rights. But the reality is, and I'll show you a real-life example in a moment, that a lot of water rights share uses. And so as we move into this era of primarily changing uses through change applications, it becomes important to quantify what uses are shared and which uses stand alone as sole supply. And so in our water rights structure, what we try to do is identify which water rights are sharing uses or are supplemental to each other. And in our system, then we create, if you look at our water right records, we create groups of water rights that share a use. And so, for instance, in this example, 0501 shares a use with 0502. That's this area here. So if you would look at the uses on water right 0501, you would see one group for this use, you'd see another group for the uses it shares with this water right. If you looked at 0502, you would see the use it has by itself here in the middle, and you would see the use it shares with one, and then you would also see the use that it shares, another group for the use it shares with three, a use that it shares with three and four, and a use that it shares with four. And so water right 0502 would actually have five groups, right? If you looked at that water right and it was correctly represented in the water right records. And similarly, these others would be more complex. And so that's what I've tried to show here, is uniquely there are these many groups of uses represented by this situation. The way our records used to be maintained on our computer system is that each of those use groups were entered independently on each water right. And so this group that was shared with 05 and 01 and 0502 was entered in water right 0501, and it was also entered in 0502. If you think about that, when we're trying to manage 170,000 water rights, over time we've had some problems because it didn't get entered the same way one site as it did the other site. And so a couple of years ago we got a lot of you upset because we tried to fix our database, and those uses that are shared together, we tried to create one record to put on each of those water rights, so that we would no longer have these two different views that might not match each other. In that process, we had the computer try to figure out if there was a group shown on 0501 and 0502, and they were the same group, and they looked exactly the same, the computer said, great, that's the same group, and it merged them into one record. Cases, we discovered we hadn't entered them the same, and so you suddenly ended up with an extra group in those two water rights because it looked different to the computer, the group that was on one water right and the group that was on another. And we've been working to clean that up, admittedly, there are still some of those problems lingering out there that we're working through. But it brings a complicated wrinkle to this problem, so you should be aware of that. But the intent, at the end of the day, is that we will uniquely show each group once. Okay. And you probably can't see that at all. That's okay. This was just what I was intending to do, was show you in our water right database. If you look at a water right record, you'll see a supplemental group, and in that group it will list all the water rights that are supplemental in that group. And in a lot of cases, you also see a little comment down here about that group. It'll have sole supply, and it will say unevaluated. And what that means is that we know that all these water rights share a use, but we don't know how much of that use should be allocated to each water right if you were to break them apart. Okay? This is a real-world example from down in Juab County to help you understand why this is an issue. We map proof maps and maps from diligence claims in a particular area there. And the first water right shows that there's about 2,900 acres under that water right. There's then an overlapping water right that's supplemental that shows 1,900 acres. And that's basically that same area. There's another water right that shows 1,100 acres, overlapping a lot of that same area. Another one that shows 340 acres. And there's actually more than the five I'm showing, but there's another one that shows 270 acres. So how many acres are really irrigated here, do you suppose? When we looked at it, it's around 3,000 acres. Okay. But if you blindly just assume every one of those water rights has all the acreage that it may claim under the right, then you'll see 6,000 acres. Obviously, if we process change applications without looking at supplemental rights, we will take basins that are already over-appropriated and make them seriously worse. And so it's important that we solve supplemental water right issues. Sorry, can I take just a minute? Just sit this down the road. You're assuming that motion. Find out if that works later. Okay. Questions with that concept? That's the concept that the rule is meant to address. Okay. As we looked at that issue, we struggled with how do we solve that issue as a change application comes to us. If one of the parties owns a water right, and all the other parties that are supplemental to it don't own a water right, how do we join them in that decision so that we consider all of their rights? And we struggled with finding a way, unless they all happen to protest, for that to happen. And so as we look at solutions, the obvious one is adjudication. We thought, great, we'll finish that tomorrow afternoon and this problem will be solved. But then the legislature denied funding last year, so we didn't get to it. Obviously, adjudication is a long-term solution. It would help solve this problem, but it will be a long time before we're able to solve this problem through adjudication. And so we came to the conclusion that probably the best way to deal with it in the interim is for the people who own those or who have those joint uses in their water rights to come to some agreement about what uses, how those uses are shared. And so we came up with what was originally called the sole supply forum. And I happened to notice when I went out to the website today that it's still called the sole supply forum. It's not supposed to be.
It's
fixed. Oh, thank you. One of the iterations we went through as we've been working on this rule is we realized we were using sole supply in 100 different ways, and we're trying to thin it down to just 50. And so we created a new term called a group contribution form. And that's what that form will officially be called, is a group contribution form. So the intent of the rule is to clarify what sole supply for a water right is, or water rights that share uses is, through agreement. That's what the group contribution form does, is it lays out all the uses in a group and allows opportunity to allocate the uses in that group between the water rights, and then have all the owners of those water rights sign the form indicating that they agree that's the way the uses should be allocated. That's the theory. Okay. One of the things that have been of concern to some people, and maybe that'll come out as we talk more, is when do we have to go through this little drill? And the issue we're concerned about is processing at this point. Is processing change applications where you're breaking up those uses, those shared uses. If you're going to continue to use the water rights the same way together, it's not really an issue. It's when you're breaking up those uses that it becomes an issue and we need to clarify. Yes, John?
You want to question the rule?
No, because you'll probably distract me unless I'm not being clear. But if you can hold on to it, we do want to answer. Okay? And so that's a little bit vague, and we'll talk a little more in detail about what we mean by that. But obviously, a municipality, if you look at our records, all of their water rights are listed as being supplemental to each other. We believe in the majority of cases, municipal water rights have already been quantified. Their sole supply is stated already on the water right in terms of its diversion and depletion. Uses for a municipality can be a little elusive. They serve a service area, but all the rights serve that same use. And so the individual water rights for that use, in most cases, have already been quantified. So municipality water rights for municipal uses in general probably won't ever have to do one of these. There may be occasions where they have irrigation rights that are shared with other uses, have to go through that exercise. There are a number of other situations we'll talk about those. But we're not looking to run everyone through this drill every time we file a change application, but we are looking to solve problems where we have to assess what the heretofore uses were and convert that to an equivalent hereafter set of uses. We are looking for that in those cases where there are shared uses. The other question that's come up a number of times is once we go through this exercise, or that we then limited to only use the water rights the way that this group contribution form has stated where we are going to divide them up. And the answer to that is no. As long as those rights continue to be used together, they can continue to be used in the manner they've always been used together. Okay? Hopefully that reflects the way that they were separated on the group contribution form. But that doesn't become a limitation while they're used together. And then as I talked about earlier, some supplemental uses on the records are excluded from this, from going through this process. This is where we find out if we really got connected. We did. Okay. So at this point, we better turn to the paper. Does everyone have a copy of the rules?
They're in the back.
Yes, they're in the back. Have you still got some there? And I don't know how many of you have had an opportunity to read the rule. Well, a lot of you have. I don't know what the best thing to do at this point is, if it's to start to entertain questions. Maybe if we have you got one, John, that we didn't?
I have a couple pages.
Oh, okay. Maybe yours better safe for Gary. Just to highlight again, if you look at 16.4 on page 3. I'm jumping through the first couple pages just to highlight again that this rule applies when the state engineer's request is to take an administrative action with regard to an individual water right that has no designated sole supply. So if the water right's already been sole supplied, then the issue is solved. Okay. It's only in instances where he needs to take action and the sole supply hasn't been identified. In the definitions, as I mentioned before, we've created the term group contribution, and what that is code for is sole supply of a group, what we used to call sole supply of a group. Okay? So we've tried to separate those terms and use sole supply to mean the sole supply for water rights uses. See anything else there to highlight? Yes?
Can I just get clarification back on 16.4?
Yes.
It says, I'm reading it, whenever there's an administrative action when there's not a sole supply designated for water. But what if there's not a need for designation of a sole supply in the administrative action? Maybe the water rights are supplemental use together, continue to use supplemental together, but you're simply adding a point of diversion.
Okay. So if you look down in.
Wait, can you repeat the question, please?
Speak louder, Don.
Yes, the heart of the question is on 16.4. It says that it will be required when there's an administrative action if there's not a sole supply designation for a water right. And yet, what if the administrative action does not require that a sole supply be designated in order for the administrative action to occur?
Okay. If you go down to section 6.1a, then it further clarifies that a group contribution form may be filed at any time, but it's required in support of the water right administrative action as deemed necessary by the state engineer. So if the change that you propose doesn't require him to quantify the uses because the uses aren't going to change, then he likely won't require the form.
What about then 16.4?
Yeah, and the operative.
That makes it sound like every change application.
Yeah, and admittedly, it muddies the water a little there. Maybe we need to clarify that a little bit. But the intent is that if the administrative action doesn't require this, in order to do the action, then it won't be required.
Even if you're changing the nature of use of a group of water rights, but they're all being changed together.
Yes, because we can look at it. Now, there may be a little caveat there. If they're changing to the same use, irrigation use, then that could work. If they're changing to a different use where we may need to quantify for proof how much is allocated to each of those rights involved in the change, there may be some issues.
Let's say you've got a group, three irrigation rights that are supplementally used together, and they're 100 acres of irrigation, and they're all being changed into municipalities. The whole group's being changed simultaneously. Will that
Yes, because at the end of the day, when we certificate change, then we're going to allocate so much diversion and depletion to each of those rights for the municipal use.
What, can we go back to your early draft of 5 for the water rights?
Sure.
No, even back to the first cartoon. I'm still confused as to if we're saying the sole supply for 1 is this area irrigated only in the yellow. For 2, it's this area. How do we account for this area that comes across without ending up shorting the water rights because it isn't sole supply? They're supplemental to each other at that point.
Well, and that's what I'm saying is that part of that area, as we sole supply, and part of that area belongs to one water right and part of it belongs to the other.
So how do you know that? Just make an arbitrary allocation?
Well, there are a number of different ways to approach it, and we've tried to allow you the flexibility to decide which method you would like to use. I mean, we've had a method we've used in the division for a long time where we start with the oldest priority right and allocate as much from it as the water supply seems to suggest could provide, and then move to the next right. All we're concerned with is at the end of the day, when you divide it between the two, that it's consistent with whatever record we have. But you're free to use whatever method you would like beyond that.
Okay, thanks.
Comment brings up a question. You indicate that in the division you used to do this method, and there are other methods that you used in the division. Which the customer to come into the division and say, help me out, and you'd say, well, this looks like what it ought to be, and it seems okay, we'll go. In this rule, there's no administrative process to figure that out, is it?
No, there really isn't, because that's one of the concerns that we've had is in our generosity to help you, have we injured somebody who didn't come with you? And that's really what the rule is aimed at, is instead of us making that magnanimous decision and helping you decide how much you have, you really ought to talk to that other person who shares the uses and come to agreement about what that number should be. And it will only expedite the process if you do that before you come here, and then we pull our hair out trying to decide what we do with that other person. If you've already solved that problem, the change applications will move much more quickly. We still want to help if we can, but we really think it's a water user decision. Those were rights that were used together, and those water users are now electing to pull them apart, and so they ought to decide what the terms of that are.
Could there be part of this rule that has some kind of an administrative process? So that would have been ventured into already, so that people could look at a good solution and decide if that's a good solution, rather than them trying to come up with a solution that they haven't approved.
And we've been working on developing some tools that you can use from the web that will basically use the rules that we have used internally, and it will generate a proposed solution for you if you want to use it. I don't know how far along that is, Bill. How are we coming on the web-based tool to make divisions for group contribution? So we hope to have some resources there to help with this process if you want to use them. But they're still being developed a bit.
Well, I had a situation with the municipality, and I'm really nervous right now. I may have done that wrong, but I did what I thought you were asking us to do. And that's within the municipality, we had 3 or 4 small individual wells. They came up with being supplemental to the city. So when I did the sole source or the group evaluation, I said, well, those little wells contribute zero to the city. And they signed it. Now, did I cut their water right off?
No.
Thank you. These guys convinced me I had when we met as a coalition.
I got a guess here to know.
Oh, is that right?
Well, there's an issue
I'll
there.
I'll take one.
In the future, don't do that.
No, that's what I'm concerned about.
That it's one of the exemptions in the rule is that we know there are a number of instances where there have been individual uses that have been joined in groups with municipalities, and they're really more independent use than that.
Well, it's for a garden or something.
So our intention is to exempt those kinds. The city doesn't have to go through this process. The individuals won't have to go through this process.
Do I need to come back and correct that?
We could do. That probably wouldn't be a bad thing to do.
How would you deal with the example then if you have in the more classic supplemental water right where I have rights in a stream, goes dry in August, and I've got a groundwater right that I pump that rounds out my duty for the year, but that surface supply varies year in and year out. I may use my well one year, I may not use it at all in another. How would you ever make a sole supply allocation that way?
Well, and that's what we're doing now is we're
that's
making
what you're asking us to do now.
Yeah. We're struggling with that when you file a change application, trying to decide how that allocation should be. And so we're saying, you've used the water rights. You know better than we do what the breakdown might be between the two. And so we're giving you the opportunity to decide how that should be done.
But when it varies year to year, any allocation you make this year makes no sense with that corresponding year down the road. So you're locking yourself in by verified statement that this is how it is, and it may only be a snapshot of how it was in the year. It's almost an impossible burden to put on water users. And you too.
But the presumption is
the totality of those water rights that give me the water right of 1,000 acres.
Yes. But the presumption is that you're filing this statement because you're changing those uses.
And I'm probably going to change both water rights and go to some equivalent use and have a combined water rights. I had an irrigation right for 1,000 acres. I don't know how you can rationally break those out except making this wild-ass assumption. You'll excuse the language. Yeah, and how is that helpful to anybody in terms of quantifying anything down the road?
Well, the problem is we're faced with that problem now because people are bringing those to us and telling us they do that. And so we're trying to deal with that. And so we're saying, wouldn't it be better to let you make that choice instead of us, especially if it's you and a name?
And if you can't agree, then where are you?
And that's the struggle that we've had for some time, is we're not trying to hold anyone hostage. And admittedly, there are situations where one of those people who share use may not be willing under any terms to sign. And what do you do in that case? I don't know. We're still trying to find out or find a way to deal with that issue.
It seems to be a denial of due process if I can't move an application forward because I've got a neighbor and he says to hold me hostage and agree on something. And I think that isn't serving the need very well either. It's something you really need to think through. I've had an example of a livestock watering right that was spread among about 6 owners and 1,000 head of livestock in all these springs. All but one guy has agreed that one guy won't. And my client has the right to water 4 equivalent livestock units. I told him he may as well forfeit the damn water right. It isn't worth the expense of trying to solve this in litigation. And that's what he's finally done. That cleans up your books, but it's a disservice to his client. He's lost a portion of the water right because practically you couldn't solve it with your office.
Yeah, but Steve, what has happened in the past? That has come to the state engineer's office. We have issued the decision. Then the guy has sued us.
Sued you, yeah.
And we don't have the authority to distribute this supplemental use out, so we're putting it back to the water user. You work this out if you want to change those uses to other types of equivalent uses. help us in the process.
I don't mind you shifting the burden, but some of these simply are beyond resolution.
Yeah.
And then for our, we've totally denied our property right because you won't process an application. I can't get this guy to solve it without expensive litigation over 48 feet. It makes no sense. That's a real unfortunate burden to put on somebody.
It's clearly a struggle that we'd like to have a better solution to, but we're not quite sure. I mean, either way.
You guys have all the answers.
Don.
As a follow-up to Steve's example, one of my concerns is that historically when this has occurred, you know, breaking up the supplemental water rights, it's been in a change application process. It's been advertised that's out there that, you know, state engineers making a decision and people have an opportunity to come in and comment. As I understand the rule now, I can just come in with my water right and make a declaration, group contribution, even if I'm not in some kind of administrative action. And I'm just worried about the potential for mischief. If I take Steve's example where I know that I've got, you know, these 1,000 acres that are irrigated, you know, mostly in good average years by the stream, but they're supplemented with my well. And now I'm looking into the future, and I'm saying, hey, I ought to make this declaration. And even though the well is only giving historically 20% of the water, I come in and I put 50% because I know that groundwater right has more future value than the stream water right. Nobody else in the room is a party of, you know, part of that or reviewing that. I simply come in and make that declaration, and now I've kind of almost bettered my situation. And I think that there's lots of places where mischief could occur in this process if it's not held to only when you have change application where water rights are being broken up.
But if you chose, Don, couldn't you totally use the groundwater right as it stood today?
That's part of the value of supplemental water rights. That's why this is such
So have you really bettered your situation?
Well, historically I haven't. So the question is what is the definition of my water?
Well, to add to what you're saying, if you have a well that's a 1950s priority and a surface right that's an 1880s priority, and but your surface right can't yield the full supply, you know, same situation. You can manipulate it so you give that surface right a full supply. I mean, you still, how will you shift the water between the wetland containers? I get all my use from the surface. That's not the case I see potential for mischief.
But once again, if it's a surface source, you still have a priority, and you're in the priority schedule, and you're never going to get more water than you ever have.
But then the change comes along with that. So down the road, that will be changed.
But between those two uses, for those two water rights, you still had the same amount of use, so there's no net increase in use. You may have shifted priorities a little, but you had that opportunity before while they were supplemental.
And I guess my only concern is that historically, when this declaration has occurred, and it hasn't been, you know, formally, it's just been, here's the historically the memorandum decision that was right out and say, you know, the following five water rights were used. State engineer would evaluate and look at it. That was done in the process of a breaking up in a change application that was advertised that any affected party could look in on and make comments on. And in this future process, it may or may not be that in that atmosphere, and hence just worried about, you know, some shifting of uses where you can't raise your hand and say, wait a minute. You know, now the creek really gave you, you know, 90% of your water supply. And now, you know, you're playing games and it may not be in the appropriate forum for other people to participate. That's the concern.
An appropriate concern. Obviously, if you change, you will still go through a change process with an application. Maybe that issue won't be as clear when it comes up.
Right, the sole supply might have been declared 5 years earlier, and the water rights changed and annotated and pieces sold off. And then at that point in time, the change application comes forward, and it's kind of almost six. So I guess obviously, you could argue that one month is always challenging, but the reality is that we're continuing to change.
John.
I want to make sure I understand how you complete the sole supply form. In Dom's example, declaring that 50% of the ride is coming from the groundwater source, the groundwater water right component. Does that mean on the other, that you have to declare for the surface water right 50%? Or are you just declaring the maximum at any given year?
No, you have, you just have to divide the use for the group between the water rights that are in the group.
So that they total...
To the group total.
Total under the beneficial use.
Yes.
Good. I don't have any problem with it when you have to divide out a right because that water right has been changed. Obviously, the groundwater right has been changed. And only the groundwater right, you have to come up with a soil supply information. But when you require a soil supply statement to be filed because some other water right in a group of 20, 30 water rights is affected, then you have to go in and seemingly arbitrarily declare what the soil supplies for all these other water rights are, but they're really not impacted by the proposed change. It seems like it's going through a process that, you know, you have opportunities where water rights will enlarge, where water rights will be divided up among water users, probably not correctly, because we have one water user knows what's going on, the others have no idea. And it seems like to me, if we are focusing in on enabling the office to evaluate a change application, to keep the information limited, and just request on the change application certain information necessary to evaluate that change application. And we leave it to another day, all these other soil supply issues that might exist.
And I don't, I mean, I think we were hoping we were helping people by resolving it once and having it over with. And that was part of the motivation in handling it this way. But I don't disagree. There may be people who understand what's going on and people who don't understand at that point, which still defeats our purpose, because our hope is that when these people come together, they will all understand that this person's taking his uses out, which means there's only going to be this much left for the rest of you.
There are very few people in Utah that can explain that to any group of water users, and who would so believe what you're saying. It comes down to how do we get people to agree?
Yeah.
To cooperate. If someone needs to file a report of water rights conveyance to update their title and they refuse to do so, that holds you up right there. Inherent in this process are the most complicated that I think can't be overcome very easily, and it's going to hold up change applications this kind of thing. So I think it should be tailored and more narrowly focused on what's the exact information we need for that particular change.
I guess, do you want to say something about comments? At this point,
we
want to answer questions today, and we appreciate the input. One thing that would be helpful, and we probably need to do in order to address things that are brought up, is if you have specific comments or suggestions, we wish you'd put those in writing and send them to us. We will put them on the website under this meeting so that they'll be available to everyone as we try to move forward. I guess you can ask.
Boyd, one of the big concerns, and you seem to indicate that it has probably a fairly easier workable solution when you're dealing with ag rights. But when it comes up in a change being requested, change of use in the municipal side, for example, another well to be done, at least there was one reading that we were getting at one time, that you would have to list all the supplemental groups of the water right holder. If that happened to be Salt Lake City, it was a fairly big list. And I don't see anything in the rule, at least to us, when we first took that look at it, that seemed to say it's not all of the
supplemental rights if you have, maybe with a group or whatever.
And admittedly, as we went back and reviewed the rule, we thought we had been clearer about municipal water rights, and we probably need to look at that a little more, because in most cases, I don't think municipal water rights ever need to file one.
Would that be reassuring that right now
we need to fix the rule?
They don't see that when they read your rule.
I understand, and I didn't see it when I read it again. So.
Public water supply, for example. Yeah, so following up on that, can you just walk us through a municipal example? Let's just say there's a city or a water district that has 10 wells, 10 underground water rights, and 2 surface rights. First of all, tell us, how has the division already done the quantification on a municipality? And then if a change application is submitted for one of the underground rights, does this rule apply? And how would the groups work in that example?
Especially if they aren't yet perfected rights.
I don't introduce that. In general, what we've done is quantified municipal rights based on a flow and a volume. And if there's not a volume, then we quantify them on a flow, basically. And so in the case of municipal rights, what the groups really do is just tie all the water rights of the municipality together so we can find them all together. And so we're not so interested, because I don't think the model works for municipalities the way that it does with irrigation, especially if it's really a municipality, because they don't have no opportunity to divest themselves of the right. So once they're in the municipality, they're going to stay there, and they're going to continue to serve the uses of the municipality. And so, in general, those rights are already quantified in terms of the flow and volume of that right. And so, if you choose to file a change application on that right, that's going to be the basis that it's evaluated.
Would there need to be a group contribution form or form submitted by municipalities?
No. That's what I'm trying to get at, is the rule probably doesn't make that as clear as it should be. We really use the supplemental groups of municipalities to identify all the rights of the municipality in one group so we can see them all.
That's probably a written comment that you will receive, that then you'll be able to point to a redefined definition.
That'd be fair. You've had one, Don. Let's give it.
Back to Steve's sort of classic scenario of having a surface right that's supplemented by water rights for irrigation use. If the same person owns both of those rights, wants to sell them to or grant them to the municipality and change them to municipal use, where they're contributing both of the rights together, would that require a sole supply? Is there any reason to break down the components there?
And the only reason to do it is that when we certificate those two rights, we'll want to allocate a diversion and depletion to each of those rights as they go to municipal use.
Priority.
And so the priority will make a difference, because
if that's the case, that does require a sole supply form and some sort of breakdown, if you can say it's up to us to figure that out. Isn't the water user losing an essential component of those rights because they have flexibility to use them perhaps drastically, one balance versus another balance? The minute they put it in writing, they're fixed to some degree. And in the future, somebody's going to complain if they're using a higher volume of groundwater than what they put in that sole supply form, or a higher level of surface volume than what's in that form, where they have no such restriction at present.
That's addressed in the rule. It is number
six, five, no, six, six, D. And it says, if quantifications made pursuant to filing a statement of group contribution does not restrict the ability of water right holders to manage the use of their supplemental water rights while they continue to be used together.
Which is kind of concrete, but that begs the question, why then did we specify numbers?
So if you choose to use them separately, you can move forward with that process, and that's the only reason.
You try just that if you carved off one or the other to a different party, you'd have a built-in volume.
Yes.
But as long as they're used together by the same owner, you can still have all the flexibility you ever had, regardless of the numbers that you put in your sole supply statement.
Yes. In fact, the rule says that you can file another sole supply statement to change what you'd already said.
So it's not permanent in that sense. If you decide you have better information or you just made an error, you can amend it.
Yes. Let's go to this one first email.
I guess the question is, if you continue to use the supplemental water rights together, then why require the quantification in the first place? Why not wait until those rights are being split up to require that quantification?
And that could be argued, and John argued that earlier, that why deal with the beast that we don't know now, wait later and see. The one value in it is that invariably, people will tend to see their water rights as having some value and sell them to someone else, and if they do it separately, then those people have some expectation, and it would really have been nicer if before they were sold, those issues would have been solved and the expectations wouldn't have been unrealistic after they sold them. But
you're imposing a present-day burden on people that may never be devaluing. It may never be necessary, and yet it's quite a burden.
And that's a reasonable comment, and I suggest you submit it right. Okay.
Board?
Yes.
Maybe if you fill out and at the end of the water deed that indicated whether you sell it, it would be helpful.
Yes. Those are the same issues.
Could I just follow up on one thing John maybe suggested? If you have sophisticated clients and they sign this and verify, they're probably going to do that with the help of good engineers and lawyers. But let's say you're dealing with your neighbors trying to get them, and they sign off and verify and make a binding admission without really understanding what they're doing. I think the fury you've seen in Tooele is just going to go through the roof if people realize what they've done and basically adjudicate their water right by signing that form. And they're bound from here on forward unless they can somehow retract that statement by filing a subsequent one. I think you might minimize an awful lot of friction by at least getting rid of that verification aspect of it. It's fine to file it, fine to get the parties to agree, but the very statement that you can file another form down the road, then you've got two conflicting admissions against central spot controls, and it really isn't good from an evidentiary standpoint if you get litigated. Try and sort out really what that is, and I'm really afraid the mom and pop who are out there are willing to sign anything to get a change application approved to the won't have any understanding of the legal ramifications of that statement. And they're the ones who are going to get caught. And the guys like Tooele who have been all over you, I think, are going to come out of the room.
On that same point, it talks about recording fees as if these will be recorded, but it doesn't require recording. Which do you contemplate happening?
When we started in this process, we contemplated recording them. And as we moved forward, we discovered that it was already hard enough just to get them done. And so we backed off the recording requirement, and we built the form with the idea that they could be recorded, and that perhaps if you'd gone through all this effort, you might want to record it. But
I've yet to find a kind of recording willing to record it, because they don't have legal descriptions or any way to tie to their index.
Yeah, and we recognize there's some issues there, and we're trying to solve that so that they.
But it raises all kinds of questions, because you may want to record it if you want to bind your neighbors unknowingly, and then it's public notice, or you may not want to record it because you may change your mind, as you pointed out, down the road. It just raises sort of terrible pitfalls, as Chris said, kind of forces you to make those decisions up front where you may regret it shortly after you've recorded it.
Other questions? Don?
Can you talk us through the exemption section 16.7? And I guess the couple of thoughts run through my mind. Obviously, and I don't want to soft this statement, but obviously when the database was implemented a couple of years ago, it created a lot of errors.
Yeah.
And so this provides that we can, you know, look at those errors. I mean, is there a process or is there a form? Do we just call up the regional engineer? And so that would be one set of errors. The other set of errors is we talked about adjudication. The best answer would be to adjudicate, but I'm finding not current adjudication, but past adjudication, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, Northern Utah County would be a great example. Adjudication is actually the one that created the supplemental nightmares, because you would have these old diligence claims or old water rights, which would be of record, which would all know the sole supply amount. And then along comes adjudication, and you've got Farmer Brown, and he's got five water rights, and he's got a field out there. And even though there was original definition in all those water rights, it was just easier for adjudication to say 200 acres, five water rights, and stick them together. And so in my mind, and those haven't been decreed yet, that's an error, but it's been on the database for 10 or 15 years kind of a thing. And so then do you need to, in those instances, come in and do a declaration, or do you need to simply come back and say, hey, when they filed their claims, it was really an error the way that they approached it, because they should have declared sole supply and we know the original definition from the original water rights.
So
yes,
about 20
yes.
questions in there. Right?
Just say
yes and no. I've been answering all the questions. How did I do this? With maybe I should approach the adjudication one first carefully. If we started an adjudication, we prepared a claim and it hasn't been published yet, okay, and there's more definitive information in the water rights that allows you to figure out what the sole supply is, then I think the information is there. And the record should just be updated to reflect that.
So you don't need to do the statement.
So you don't need to do the statement. You just need to bring that information to our attention, and that's one of the issues this rule was intended to address, where it says we will correct problems.
What if it's been put in the PD but not decreed?
If it's been put in the PD and it's been published, then we're in a little bit different land. And I'm not an attorney, so we need to have someone else answer that question. But we won't do that right now. But that's a little bit different situation that we have to address. What were the other 14 questions?
The other was just the database of 2 years ago just reached out and anything with a common name. You know, you've got an industry and they all got lumped together, even though they really had definitions beforehand. So it's just the database has now said that there's supplemental, even though there's been no official action historically to claim supplemental.
That was not done as part of the database change. The only thing the database change did was looked at all the water rights that currently had supplemental groups and identified what other water rights they said they were supplemental with, and went and looked at the other water right and tried to join those as one group. And if when it looked at both of those, they looked different, it created two groups, one of each, and put on both of the water. It did not create new groups. It only made all the groups that were shown on all the water rights related to the water rights they were related to, so you saw it on both sides.
It appears that there were name linkages that somehow made it so that listing of, you know, you had several that were supplemental one to another, and it was a common name.
and then the brothers of supplemental, and maybe there was an overlap that now all of a sudden water right 8 shows water right 15 as being supplemental to it.
It was done, I think it was done
strictly by me afterwards.
Okay. But anyways, if those kinds of things come up, the process is just to go to the regional engineer and say, delete these?
Or we would appreciate it if you would do it in writing and say, these things appear to be wrong to me from what I can see of the record. We will then take that and promptly review what you've got and fix the record if that's appropriate and get back with you.
Without going, that's what that section.
That's what that section is intended to address, is we know there's mistakes. We're human. That's been pointed out a number of times. And so if you see a mistake, please bring it to our attention and we'll correct the problem. Yes?
I represent the Colo River Water Users Association, and I went online yesterday to check one of the association's water rights. The printout ran on for between 250 and 300 pages. Most of that were lists of supplemental group after supplemental group after supplemental group. I think most of the rights listed in those supplemental groups were not ours. They belong to private water users in Salt Lake and Utah County. Aside from looking at this from our point of view, what kind of a sole supply statement we have to file if we ever file a change application, but looking at it from the other point of view, every time one of those private water users files a change application, I think under this rule, they're going to have to come to us and ask us to sign off on quantification. I don't, first of all, that's a huge administrative burden. And secondly, I don't know how I would react to those requests. How would signing off on all of those quantifications affect our rights? Would our universal antigen be go away?
Yeah. And that was actually what exemption number 4, so section 7.4, was meant to address. The state engineer reserves the right to eliminate water rights from water use groups if the uses are based on shares in a mutual irrigation company, a contract with a water supplying entity, or a connection to a municipal water system. We know that there was a practice in preparing claims for some time that if water was available from another water supplier, whether it was used with this water right or not, they were put supplemental to each other. And so if there's evidence that the water right really can act on its own, then our intent would be to say the statement's not required. Because obviously you don't want to give up anything in that case, because you may not have even been serving that use before, and they don't want to give up anything on the other side.
I mean, is there a reason you couldn't just build that into the rule instead of making it entirely discretionary?
Well, the struggle is, and it's one of the things we struggle with, is there are cases where they clearly are supplemental to each other. For instance, the example I put up earlier from Juab County was actually a water company and then several private water rights. And they happened to be big acreage and they overlap a lot. And so there are cases where clearly there does need to be a meeting of the minds because the shares were used in the same place as those private rights. But there are a lot of cases where the database shows them where there aren't shares. And so we wish that it was black and white, but it isn't right now. So that's why we ended up where we're at. Yes.
I'm going to expand just a little bit on what Chris said, or maybe ask my question. You know, so with Fred and all these guys that most of their clientele or whatever have are dealing with attorneys that are dealing with this, That's one thing. But average Joe Farmer Brown in rural Utah or somewhere that may have a water right on where your red section is, and he wants to sell, he wants the sun to build on that a little spot, divert a couple acre feet for a well for his domestic use and pull it off the sole source, and he happens to be overlapped in four different spots, and his boy wants to put his house right on the corner of that particular pivot or that little 10 acre section or whatever that is. Can you walk us through what that, what he would have to do and the requirements that he would have to, especially if one of those water rights were represented by somebody like Chris who may or may not want to sign off on a, on that. What would, how would that affect the small guy doing a small sole supply change, point of diversion, change of use, or something like that? Is it not shifting the burden onto from what used to happen into a hearing situation, what he was speaking about, is not that you're almost asking him to resolve the issue before you guys are going to consider the change application?
We are, in one sense. If I mean, there's a couple of different scenarios that could play out. I presume you're talking about if he owned this water right and he just wanted to carve off a little bit for his son. One option.
Yeah, but he won't, but he, the place he wants to put it is right happen to be where it's overlapping on all of the place, where everybody overlaps. Yes.
Right.
It's cheaper to move his house.
I mean, you can build the house wherever you want, you know. But if you want to use, move that use somewhere else, and you're going to have to file a change application, then yeah, you're going to have to resolve that issue because the water right is shared among multiple rights.
Well, for the large stuff I understand, but for the little situation I'm giving you right there, which happens all the time, especially in rural Utah, that particular, that's almost like a lawyer's dream.
But one practical solution, there's a real easy practical solution in that his sole supply here is well defined, and so he could segregate off of the group, this group here, an amount necessary for a domestic use there.
And put that water in,
so you just reduce the red.
And you just reduce the red.
So you'd allow
somebody
to segregate to dodge a sole supply network.
But everybody else is still.
Yeah, because this much of it is already a sole supply.
Yeah,
and
if it's not quantified.
What was.
If it's not quantified, you're saying if that sole supply is already, or the supplemental right, or anything that overlaps in that area, aren't you asking them now? Aren't you asking them to get signed statements for each one of those supplemental users there?
Well, if you want to change those uses, but if you want it, because this part of it, that group only has one water right in. So if you want to just, if you want to segregate it off of that part.
It's not just one water right, there's several in that spot.
And if there's several of them, you have to work through that if you want to change those uses.
It just goes back to the point that either we'll have to do it or they'll have to do it.
Yeah, one way or the other, we're going to have to do it or you're going to have to do it.
Well, right now, isn't it done by hearing? By a change application, we do it?
No.
We file a change up. Anybody interested in that particular change application has a right to put a written comment in. We take care of that right now that way.
But the reality is you don't take care of it that way. They file the change application with the proposal. Whether they work with us to decide what they think is the amount that they have available under that change. They still file the change application. They really never give notice to those other people except by publication, which is the same thing that will still happen.
It appears to me like the burden shifts though quite a bit to the small water, especially in a small situation like this one.
I really appreciate that question because I think that gets to the heart of the issue, and that's why we're going through this whole process. If you look at the history of the state engineer's office, from 1970 up through the 80s, we got about 500 change applications a year. The majority of those, three-quarters of them, were changes in the point of diversion place of use. Fairly simple, and we could deal with them. Some of those dealt with transfers of the nature of use from one user to another. If you look at their growth in change applications, in the period 1990 to 94, we started to receive more change applications than applications to appropriate. And today, we are dealing with between 1,200 and 1,500 change applications a year. The majority of those are going from a different owner, a different use, a different point of diversion, place of use. They're being transferred from one segment of our economy to another. And many of the questions, and the exact ones you've asked, have come back to our division to resolve. And one of the things that I've been trying to deal with is the processing of applications, dealing with the workload. And one of the things that I have realized, I hope I'm right in the analysis, we as a division cannot continue to answer every question that's out there. We have to move some of that responsibility back to the water users to help us. The other day, Kent Jones was at a water user function, and somebody came up to him and said, "Kent, that application we filed the other day got through in, was it 80, 90 days? Fairly complicated, complex, and so on." And Kent said, "Yes, you did your homework. You give us the data and information we needed to evaluate. I've got regional engineers who are spending hours trying to address the very issues Steve Clyde brought up, that John Mabee has brought up, and others. They are struggling. They're working hard. And they're tough questions. I think what we are asking is we want the water community to help us on this. We cannot continue to make these type of decisions when we don't have all of the data. Plus, there's questions about whether we have the authority to say, yes, your water right is sole supply for this versus your neighbors. That's the reason we're going through this. Before I stepped off this ledge, believe me, I sat down with boys and I said, do we really want to do this? And I realized it will never get better. We've got to deal with it. I do not sign a proposed determination book unless every water right in there has a sole supply. Okay? It resolves it. It's due process. Somebody doesn't like it, they take it before the judge and do it. The problem is the adjudication is only addressing a very small portion of their problem. Again, we tried to put some flexibility within this, but again, let's see if I can get there. This one here that Boyd showed, this is a real example. We've got change applications that are based upon groundwater rights, and that's probably this one here, where that water right has 340 acres total that it uses supplemental with other water rights. How much of that can they change? In essence, can they sell off and move to other uses? If we don't get a handle on this, it's going to be the 6,000 acre number down there. I don't think that's what we want to do. We want to evaluate them based on what their historical use is, what does this right supply versus this one here, and then move forward with change applications. We want to get change applications through the office as quickly as you do. But there's some struggle. That's the reason we're here. We would appreciate any comments that you have that will help us to better define this. We want to take care of the water users' concerns. We're not saying the rules that we've got out there are perfect, but this is our first shot at it. And I think some of the questions today have been very helpful to help us better focus on some of the issues. Yes, Mr. John.
Can the original engineers currently talk to the applicants and ask them for the information that they're struggling with? I've seen a lot of situations where the phone call was made, the issues that they've been struggling with and been holding up a change, you know, to be dealt with right away and move on.
And if it's those type, yeah, they'll do it. It's the situation where some of the questions, well, I wonder if the neighbor won't agree to this or that, those are the ones that then put us in a tough spot to work through.
I don't. Jerry, question on this Nephi one, are any of those municipal rights or are they all ag rights?
They're all ag rights. They're all ag. And they were basically moving them over to individual domestic homes, those type of things. We've had some problems where a supplemental right such as this 53-374 started to sell off little portions of it, and lo and behold, they sold off more than what they should have, and it's presented some problems to us. And so what we're trying to do is say, okay, up front, before we start moving water off of 53-374, let's decide what it's worth as well as the others that it's used supplementally with, so we don't get into the problems and the water users.
Two questions. Maybe one of the debates is a question too. I'm going to guess a little bit that there's probably a power plant involved in some of these exchanges.
No.
So it has nothing to do with the power plant at all. No. The second part of the question, as you've seen the growth in your, in the requests and so on, the paperwork that you guys are going through now, how much of that is still almost purely ag-to-ag transfer? Or isn't there a huge growth in changes from ag to municipality? If we're going to exempt out the municipality, who are the public water users, how much does the rule solve the problem?
As far as changes ag-to-ag, and Boyd and I are the ones who look at most of those that come through, that's a very small percentage of the change application that we
did. That was going to be my guess.
I would say 15-20%, maybe even less than that. The majority of the changes that we're seeing are converting to ag to a domestic type use or M&I, that type of thing.
And if we're going to, if I understood what Boyd said in the rule, if we're going to come back as far as exempt M&I?
Not when they're changing to it, after they are M&I.
After they're already done, okay.
Yes. So we would go
M&I
through
the M&I.
Suppose a city wanted to buy 53-374. Okay. We would require that water right be evaluated and the sole supply determined. Maybe the sole supply is 250 acres. Then that's what would be used to evaluate that water right and what can be.
So when the transfer occurs, that there being basically a fixed number on it as opposed to waiting, which I think is happening, waiting for a change application to be applied by these municipalities.
Yeah.
I'm going to add a question. First, I think all of us here appreciate it holding the meeting. It helps to be able to flesh some of these things out. We're going to have to deal with them after the fact, so thank you. My question is, when we submit one of these supply forms, if the rule becomes permanent, what's the approval process? Is this something that your staff or you will review and issue an approval order on, or is it just whatever we fill out, you have to take it at face value, or what kind of reviews and approvals or rejections can we look forward to?
Well, and I'm sure if there's anybody in this room, it'd be very reasonable and acceptable for everyone to have to worry about it. But those people outside of this room that may want to cut corners a little bit and so forth, maybe we need to put in some type of review. The majority of these will occur in conjunction with the change application. And at that point, we would give legal notice. People would have an opportunity to look at that and comment on it, whether it's appropriate, and we could probably even address it in the decision. Again, we're hopeful that the water community will do their homework, that they give us something that's fairly reasonable to review and look at. We may say, should you consider this or that type of thing. Now we're getting nothing, and so our staff have to sit down and scratch their head, and we make a decision and throw something out there. Maybe it'll stick, maybe it doesn't.
Would this be like a report of conveyance, maybe where you somebody signs to say it's accepted and filed, or does it just get placed in the file?
It would be our hope that it would be filed and just placed on the file. That in the the end of the day, let's say there's 3,000 acres in this whole thing. When you go through and add up the water rights, there's a sole supply for 3,000. And that's the balancing or the counting that goes on. We wouldn't accept sole supply statements for those water rights that would exceed that.
Jerry, can I just comment on the justification and not understand the justification for the rule, the reason, the process of justification. But the statement that you just made of doing a lot of homework and being reasonable and those kinds of things, I mean, I was involved in one that was just three little diligence claims, and initially there wasn't a requirement, and there was, and we went and did it, and it was, but it probably cost them $2,000 or $3,000 to do a reasonable type of an effort, because we wanted to do the right kind of effort, even though it was 15 acre feet of water. And so in the justification, I think, where it talks about, hey, this is 60 seconds and no big deal, it is, you want it to be a big deal because you want it to be done right, and I think that maybe there ought to be some clarification and justification that this is really asking for a declaration of water rights.
Okay. Good comment. Okay. That's right.
As I reflect back on my life, the two worst haircuts I ever got was one that I gave to myself, and the other was one that the Army barber gave me a haircut as well. But you're asking us to share in the haircutting process, and we're going to pass around the clippers.
Yeah, we could at least do some scissors. Rubber band and scissors,
yeah,
and cut everything below the rubber band. Again, we've extended the period till November 3rd to get comments. So we would ask you to give us comments. If we need to hold another meeting, we'll be willing to do that. We want this process to work. So we realize this is one of those issues that's hard to get your arms around, but hopefully you've at least caught the concept today and have a better understanding of where we're coming from, and then can give us informed comments as to how we can refine the rules that we're looking at. A couple more questions here.
Yeah. Just ask some specific concrete questions. Will there be any other type of administrative actions other than change applications for reforms that you've required?
What about sometimes exchanges almost look like changes, don't they?
So possibly exchanges improve. How about proofs?
There could be times in proof processes, yeah.
So would the rule apply to proofs and change applications filed before the rule was effective? I mean, are you going to come back and require for some of these proofs that have been in for 10 years or so that they do a sole supply statement?
I would say our intent would be not to do that, but again, I don't want to say with an absolute yes, no, because there may be some that really present some problems to us.
Still, that decision needs to be made, and who should make it? People who want rights at our should be making that decision rather than us kind of guessing. But we need to know that.
So who in the office will kind of be supervising the sole supply statement process? In terms of if there are questions that come up, the regional engineer can answer and lots of direction, who will be supervising?
I have asked a number of staff people to address that issue. Boyd has been involved in that. Lee has. Bill Slothauer. Who else was? Kent. So, you know, any of those four should be able to address it. If not, they can circle the wagons. And we're learning as well as we go through this process.
As you go receive the comments, think this through, if there are changes to the rule that's proposed, what do you envision the process to be to go through that change?
If they were significant, we would probably have to republish. And again, if they're fairly extensive, we may even want to hold another public meeting. go through those discuss.
Chair, that's what I was going to suggest, that after you get the first round of comments, it might be put out a draft and have another review or meeting like this. I think it's just very good.
And as you know, we like to be open with things, probably to the point of a fault. So we will put all the comments out on our website. We'll go out there to meetings, I guess, will be under current issues. So we'll skip all the comments out there. You can review those. And I would assume as you read each other's comments, it may even stimulate some additional comments that you might have. So we will do that and keep you informed of the process as well and any future public meetings.
This report will be on the internet too.
Yeah, this is being recorded. We'll go through and edit whatever we have to on that before we put it out there. We appreciate your attendance today. We realize this is a tough issue, but it's one we're committed to work through, and it's one as an office we think we have to do if we're going to be successful long term. So with that, we appreciate your attendance. Thank you.